Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are joining our program today. Both myself and my co-host here, we are financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays helping people like yourself both plan for their retirement and transition to retirement and other financial matters for that.
Yeah, all kinds of like how to pay for college many times or how to pay for a kid's grandchild's college. That's not unusual at all.
No, it's interesting.
Yeah, not unusual at all.
Particularly those that end up at that stage in life with, frankly, more money than they're going to spend during their lifetime.
Oh, you know, I'm going to share a story about
that.
And
we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on there. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's give...
Go ahead. Now I'm intrigued.
Well, let's give our phone numbers out. One. We got to get people to call the show.
1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And we would like to take your call regarding really anything financial. 1-888-2-HANSON. So, you know, it's funny. Pat and I do the show prep stuff to talk about what we want to talk about. And then... Here, sometimes right in the middle,
this is
now it's a story. Well,
the reason is
this a good story?
Yeah, it's well, naturally. The reason I'm sharing it is I was looking at my calendar before the show, and the client's coming in to see me in a couple of weeks, and we're going to employ this strategy. So,
what strategy?
I'm going to share it with you. So, I have a couple clients that have saved up more than enough money than they're going to spend in retirement.
Probably more than a couple. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. More than.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and by the way, that's a good place to be in retirement. Just so we're all clear, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's always okay to end up with too much money. It's really not okay to run out.
And what it means is that they're living within this. Most of them have the same standard of living in retirement as they did when they were working.
And they were probably good savers.
They were great savers.
I bet none of them had I bet none of them had inherited bunches of money.
Nope.
Or struck it rich by working for the right company.
Correct. Good savers, good investors, the whole time, professionals. So I'm working with this client, and he's got more, like I said, more than enough money. And I told him, I said, you know, you're not going to, based on these distributions, you're not going to spend this in your whole lifetime. And so I had him in a moderate portfolio, right? Not too much risk. And
yeah. He's like, you don't really need to because you're... You don't need the excess return, so...
Yeah, right. Why take the risk? So,
and this all comes down to personal... You might have the client the next hour who's the other way around.
Well, this is how we start, and as years go by, he gets more and more comfortable with me and the portfolio, and he says, this thing needs to be a lot more aggressive. He and his wife, this needs to be a lot more aggressive. So, no, that's appropriate, but tell me why you're thinking it needs to be more aggressive. He said, I'm not going to spend this money in my whole lifetime. You told me that when I retired. I believe it. I know that quite a bit of this money is going to be onto my children, and I want it to be invested for them, so I need it more aggressive. And I thought, you know, that makes an awful lot of sense. Makes a ton of sense. What we're going to do is we're going to take your portfolio and we're going to put it in two different accounts. One that you're going to take monthly distributions on and that you can pay attention to and look. And it is built for your timeline.
This is your money.
This is your money. The other part of the portfolio, we're going to set in a different account, and we're going to manage it for your children's lifetime, not yours.
Very long time horizon.
Very, very long time horizon. And we're going to make that portfolio about 90 to 95% stock.
Because you've got time on your side.
And he said, that is a great idea. Comes in 6 months later and says, my portfolio is doing great. And I said, what about the other portfolio? He said, I never even look at the other portfolio. It's based on my children's timeline.
That is a good story.
It is.
All right, let's go to the calls. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Vacaville with Dan. Dan, you're with Hanson McLean.
I enjoy your show and happy to be on it. Anyway, I just turned 65. I had been disabled but I'm going to officially retire here November 1st. I'm married, own a house, owe about $260,000 on the house. The house worth $800,000. I have an IRA of $300K. $250K of that is in stock, and $50,000 I have in cash. I have a deferred compensation account that's worth $650,000, and it will pay out roughly $50,000 a year for the next 20 years. It'll be worth about $1 million.
All right, go through the deferred comp numbers with me one more time, please.
Okay, the deferred comp currently has a value of $650,000.
Okay.
But come January 1, I'm going to get a lump sum amount of $200,000 mm-hmm. for retirement restoration.
Got it.
And then the $450K that's left, I have $200K that's accruing interest at 9.3%. And I have another $250,000 account making 4%.
Got it. So it's got some GICs, guaranteed interest contracts in that.
From years ago.
Yes, from years and years like ago, decades. Correct?
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. What's your question for us?
My question is, I also have $350,000 in cash, but right now I need to make a decision on my pension. My pension, I could take a lump sum of $749,000 lump sum, or I could take a guaranteed 100% survivorship payment of $44,000 a year, which will equate to about 5.89% interest.
And you had mentioned that you were out on a disability previously.
That's correct.
Is it a medical disability for heart or diabetes, or what drives this decision between a pension and a lump sum is date of death of both you and the surviving spouse. So
right.
That's the biggest driver in there. And it's, you know, it's not the most comfortable thing to talk about, but if to the companies, when the company looks at it and they're issuing these, they don't care whether you take the monthly pension or the lump sum. It's all the same number to them actuarially. If you thought you were going to live to be 150 years old, then the monthly might make more sense. If you thought you were going to live 3 more years, then most certainly the lump sum would make the most sense. So give us that. Tell us a little bit about life expectancy. How old were your parents when they died? What kind of medical issues, as much as you're comfortable talking about, for both you and your spouse?
Sure. Actually, my father's still alive. He's 85 years old. He's in good health. He did have a small heart attack here around 2000, but really hasn't knocked him out of too much commission, just slowed down some. I went out on medical disability because of my back.
Okay. All right. Got it. That's what we were looking for. Heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, anything like that?
I'm doing well there.
What are you leaning towards? What do you feel best about?
Well, I think I've heard before you guys have given a guy some, you told him to take a 6% payout on a PG&E pension. So when I heard you say that, you know, that's a sure thing. And I'm thinking I have enough other money that I can put it in the market. And the only drawback that I see with a pension, with a monthly or yearly pension, is that it's not going to keep up with the rate of inflation.
Right.
So I like to go with the sure thing, but then again, I don't know how far that money will take me as far as for the rest of my life, considering what inflation may do.
Well, inflation is a secondary issue on whether you take I mean, it's a factor for you as a person and as a family, right? But it's actually when calculating this, it's when you got to compare apples to apples.
And the reality is that when people talk about inflation, you're relatively isolated from a lot of the inflationary impacts because of your age and your spending pattern.
Yeah.
Right. So
some things impact you. Food,
housing. No.
Nope.
Right?
Utilities.
Medical care?
Medical, for sure. So the challenge, the older we get, the tougher it is for us to take a lump sum and generate an equal return because our life expectancy is shorter, right? So if you were 50, if you were 55, we'd probably say, take the lump sum because the numbers wouldn't be 5.9. It'd be something different. But now that you're 65, it looks a little more attractive. I mean, the challenge is when people tend to revert to the pension because it's easy and it's kind of known. But if you had the $750,000 in an IRA, let's say, you probably wouldn't say, I want to go to an insurance company and buy myself a pension through an immediate annuity. You'd probably say, I've got some other.
I'd look at this in context. So it might make sense for you to sit down with an advisor and do a financial plan. But there's a couple things that I, just based on the information you gave me, I would do immediately. When you said you had $350,000 in cash and you owe $265,000 on your home, I would probably pay the house off immediately.
Or in January when the other deferred comp money comes in.
You also said you had a deferred compensation plan that was actually going to pay out $50,000 a year for the next 20 years, correct?
Correct.
That actually, because you have that, and if there's guarantees on that, I would have a tendency to want to actually take the lump sum because of that $50,000 a year in guaranteed income over the next 20 years. Drive me a little bit closer to taking the lump sum.
If you didn't have that, it's an easier decision.
If you didn't have that, I probably actually would probably lean towards taking more of the pension.
Can you take a partial
That was the question I was going to. Are you allowed to take a partial lump sum?
There is ways of taking partials and setting them up in different time periods. There's a lot of different scenarios.
On the pension, not the deferred comp, on your pension.
Yes, on the pension, correct.
Oh, so this is getting much easier.
Getting more complicated.
But easier.
You have more options, yeah. Okay.
Well, no, it's getting more, the decisions are more complicated. The mitigation of risk is getting easier.
That's correct.
Right? The mitigation of risk, because when it gets down to the end, you would take whatever has the highest payout, but the thing that we don't know is what risk is associated with all these different decisions. So we know the easiest, cheapest, or the easiest, least risky thing is to take the monthly pension, but I would have a tendency to probably split it.
I would too. And just because it's a pretty significant portion of your liquid net worth and your deferred comp is already locked in there, it's really going to come down to what your income needs are the next 5-10 years. And we know that we have to worry about 20 years from now. You mentioned inflation. My concern is cash flow 20 years from now when that deferred comp ends. So how do we have something structured that gives you the highest probability? And frankly, it's probably the money you've got in stocks. The challenge you're going to have is in 5 years, you're going to have required minimum distributions. So you're going to be forced to sell your stocks over the years when you really need it for when you're 85.
Yeah. So I would...
Sit down with a good financial advisor who can... I mean, we can't... There's too many moving parts.
But I would be predisposed to pay off the house with the money in cash. And that would mitigate tremendous amounts of risk. And actually would give you a higher return. Take a look at your Social Security when you start those. And then imagine at the end of the day going through this process, I'd be looking at probably a partial lump sum.
And I'd want to figure out how much money should I set aside today to replace that $50,000 a year 20 years
from now.
I would do the mathematical calculation on that first. And it might actually mean some of the cash you have now invest in stocks and reallocate your IRA because the money in the IRA, you can't leave it intact for 20 years because of the required minimum distributions.
So
sure,
you're in a great shit.
Financially, you're great. You're ready to retire. I mean, you're fine financially. It's just threading the needle, and it's going to actually require you to sit down with a qualified advisor and actually go through a financial planning process. Beware of anyone that leads with product, tries to sell you an index annuity or non-traded real estate investment trust or some life insurance disguised as a investment. You want someone that actually is going to look at the problems that you have and the solution, and then brings in particular products to solve those solutions at the end of it.
Yeah, I have actually contacted Morgan Stanley. I don't know if I should say their name over the phone. but I did.
Yeah.
So they'll have They'll have some great advisors. I'm a little biased against the large firms because they manufacture their own products, which means they'll have a tendency to push something that they manufacture, and most of their brokers are sell commission products.
But you're not interested in products yet. You want someone to actually show you on paper
a certified financial planner who works with retirees.
A probable income stream for the next 25 years
and
is what you're looking
for. Then you need to deal with the 20 years from now is a, my opinion, that's a thing we need to deal with.
Yeah, that's why you want to look at a probable income stream for the next 25 years.
And then you work backwards. Then it'll help just figure out the pension or lump sum or what portion of it. So, all right.
On one other question. Yes, sir. My interest rate on my home loan is 3.25%.
Uh-huh.
You think that's think I should use that money to pay that off?
Yeah, so you've got $350,000 in cash. What's the interest rate you're earning on that?
Right now, I've just been waiting to invest it.
I wouldn't do anything until I put together a good plan to really look at these issues. I wouldn't do anything until you really looked at these issues.
Yeah, I agree with Scott.
Because it might end up being that you take a good chunk of the cash, earmark that for the replacement of the deferred comp 20 years out.
And then start draining off the...
And it might be that you actually have an IRA if it's a small distribution to pay the mortgage.
Pay down the mortgage.
I mean, there's a
bunch of different...
Yeah. And then you got to look at what's the income tax implications and all that, too.
But congratulations on the retirement.
Yeah.
You've got... you'll be fine. Time. It's how do you set it up. And you do need a financial plan. You don't need products.
Yeah.
You need a financial plan. So appreciate the call.
All right. Good. Okay. Yeah, congrats and good luck to you, Dan. Hope it all goes well. And continuing on in Northern California, let's talk with Kelly. Kelly, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Kelly.
How are you?
Good.
We are wonderful.
What can we do for you, Kelly?
Okay, I have a question. I was listening to your show on Sunday, and I had a question regarding my 401(k)B, whatever it is.
Okay.
I work for a large organization, and I have a fairly substantial, it's almost $400,000, 401(k). However, I have, when I retire here, I'm 64. When I retire from this facility, I'll have about $3,000 a month, roughly retirement. I also retired from another large organization, and I have $3,000 a month from them as well. But my mortgage payment pretty much takes that retirement away.
Okay.
So my question is would it be to my advantage to take my 401k that I have through the place I currently work as a lump sum and pay my mortgage down so I'd have roughly about $100,000 on my mortgage payment, and that would be a small payment versus the $3,000 that I currently have.
How much do you owe on the home?
About $5,000.
Nope.
$500,000.
$500,000. And what's the interest rate?
Right now, it's a 4.75.
And
it's a fixed rate?
Yes,
and
fixed rate.
What's the value of the home?
About $850.
Are you married?
Nope, single.
When do you plan on retiring?
A year from now.
And will you be eligible for Social Security benefits?
Yes, I'll be 65 then.
And how much will you receive?
Well, I guess 66 is really when I'm supposed to retire, but I'm not going to go till 66.
So you didn't have a period of time. Well, the reason I asked that question, if in some states, if you're a state worker, you didn't pay into Social Security.
Are you a state worker?
I worked for a hospital and paid into Social Security.
Okay, yeah. That's the right answer.
That's just hospital. It's 401k, 3B.
403B. Yeah. So mm-hmm. We've got $7,500 a month in income.
What's your income right now?
A little over $200,000.
Okay. It changes a little bit here. You have a relatively high retirement income of approximately $90,000 a year between the two pensions and the Social Security benefits. The problem, which is high, I mean, that is, if people were listening to this show, they'd be like, wow, that's a lot. Well, if people, the people, let's assume someone's listening to the show, approximately, they'd say that $90,000 a year is a lot of income. The problem is that you're used to making $200,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
You pay down the home. Is there any money in savings anywhere?
No, I own a rental property in Kentucky, and the mortgage pays the insurance and the mortgage payment.
How big is this house, Kelly, that you're living in?
It's 2,600 square feet.
It's just the location. Is the plan to be in this home for the next 20 years?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I don't know if I would. The problem is to pay this, you're not going to get the mortgage paid off by using your 401k and 403b.
And you can't, if you pull it out while you're working, it's disastrous because you already got $200,000 a year of income, plus your other pension, plus.
But if she pulls it out,
even if you wait till you retire,
yeah,
the taxes are going to be.
Right. So I was going to wait until I retired, but I would still have to pay taxes on it, correct?
Correct. It won't help the situation.
What's your mortgage payment excluding taxes and insurance?
About $2,500.
I don't think I'd do a thing.
So you just leave it where it's at.
Scott, your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, taking money out of your 401k to pay it off is not. Pay it down. It's just not.
Even if you got it paid down, you're not going to get it paid off.
Right. But the mortgage would be less.
Well, yeah.
Here's one strategy we could look at. You've got pensions. You have your pension and Social Security coming in. You could look at saying, what if you took $2,500 a month out of your 401k? How long is that going to last with some assumed rate of return on your assets in your 401k? At that point, what would then be the mortgage balance and look at using a reverse mortgage 15 years from now or whatever it is when that
15 years from now.
But I'm saying is use the 401k to make the mortgage payment, knowing that you're going to be drawing down some on that 401k while paying down that mortgage 15 years out or whatever the time frame is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
The mortgage balance would be less at that period of time. Presumably, the home value has gone up at that period of time.
Do you have heirs that you want to leave money to?
I have three children. Yes.
And you want to leave them something?
I would hope so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, not everyone feels the way you do. Not specifically about your children, but about their own.
I mean, they don't have to have a huge amount, but it would be nice to leave them something.
I wouldn't do a thing.
So you just continue the way it is.
I wouldn't do anything between now and retirement. But at retirement, the issue Kelly's going to be looking at is, all right, how do I?
I hear what you're saying, Scott. But what's my standard of living look like?
Yes.
Because he's used to it. I would wait and get there and live 6 months in retirement with that income to see how I was managing it before I decided anything.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I would just test drive it. So Scott's idea is a good idea, which is what happens if we start a distribution from the 401k or 403b in order to make the mortgage payment. But the reality is,
you're not going to earn enough on those accounts to generate. Odds are you're not going to earn enough for that account to remain intact for the next 30 years.
Correct. So you're going to draw it down.
How many years do you have left on your mortgage?
Well, I refinanced because I put solar in. I live on 6.5 acres.
Okay.
And I remodeled the house. That's why the house is worth what it is. So, because when I moved in there, it was totally dated. It's a 1976 house. And it had never been remodeled, and it needed a new roof, et cetera.
So, Kelly, here's all of this information, actually, what you just told me, 6.5 acres, you're 64 years of age, leads me even more to the fact that you shouldn't be trying to pay this thing down.
Okay.
Right? And the reality is, and we can talk about, maybe you're different, but the real, and we have over 6,000 clients that we work with from the ages of,
Most of them are retirement age.
Of retirement age. But what we see is when you get into your late 70s, 80s. If you've got acreage, it's very, very rare for you to stay on that acreage. That's just the reality of it. And you've got 6.5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
I
like Pat's idea. Don't do anything.
Retire and then see what the cash flow looks like for the first 6 months. If you need to supplement it with $1,000 or $1,500 a month out of your 401k, then...
But run some plans on that, too, because...
But you can't pay.
You took $200,000 out of it, or let's say you took the $400,000 out today to pay it off, you're going to be left with a half of that.
And then you still owe $300,000 on your mortgage.
The taxes are going to clobber you.
Okay.
Because it's added on to all the additional income, all like you made it in that one year.
Don't do anything right now. Just retire, see what the cash flow looks like. And then after 6 months, if you need to supplement your income, your pension income, by taking money out of the 401k, you can give us a call and we'll look at that.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right, Kelly, glad you called.
All right. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you very much. Right. Bye-bye. Right.
We're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
1-888-2-HANSON will get you onto our program. Again, if you'd like to call the show, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're going to talk about, we're going to take, we'll go hit these calls first, but there's an interesting story that I had no idea the amount of people that had invested in this particular asset and how many people's lives is ruined.
Crazy.
Right? Yeah. So we're going to talk about that later in the program. But first, let's go to some calls. We're starting with Boulder, Colorado, talking with Greg. Greg, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hi, Greg.
So I've done my homework here so that I think I can present this pretty quickly to you, and hopefully you can answer my question for me.
All righty.
I'm a 48-year-old police officer. I've been a police officer for about 25 years. And during that time, of course, invested, you know, in retirement like everybody would. I don't have a defined benefit package, and of course, I don't pay Social Security because of it. I have a 401, 457, and then two RHS accounts, and then did my own Roth as well. And in total, I've got about, what have I got here? About $620,000 total in that account. I should also say that back in 2006, I was involved in an officer-involved shooting, and when the market was cheaper and things were less expensive, I started buying up real estate. I actually tried to sell my house, and you know, like a lot of people did, I ended up having to turn it into a rental, and pretty quickly realized that I actually enjoyed having rentals. And up through January of 2012, acquired six total rental properties.
And how many rental properties do you own now?
Six total.
Okay.
It would be four houses and then seven apartments.
Okay.
And so anyway, you know, over time you start making more money on those and paying down debt and that kind of thing. And I've gotten to the stage where I'm actually making about $4,500 a month as rental income on the side from the six properties.
Okay.
And where I'm going with this is that it's my understanding that 2 years ago, sworn police officers in the year that you turn 50, you can access your 401 now without penalties. You know, most people have to wait till 59 and a half. And it was 55 for us, and now it's dropped down to 50. So here in 2020, that'll be the year that I turn 50. Uh-huh. And I'm actually thinking I would then access my account to pay off my debt.
All right. Well, let's stop for a second here.
Okay.
So there's a difference in the rules between the 457 and the 401ks. When you say that you were thinking of doing this, do you mean that you plan on retiring or not retiring? at age 50?
Yes. I was thinking about throwing in the hat at 27 years.
Got it. Okay, that's okay. At age 50. How much money do you have in your 457 plan versus your 401k?
Okay. My 401 has $369,000, and the 457 has $206,000.
Okay. And then your idea was to take the money out for what reasons? To live on? To pay down debt?
No, it's what I really... Right. My primary thing would be to pay off my personal residence.
And how much do you owe on your personal residence?
$313,000.
And what's the interest rate on it?
I don't know. It's pretty low. It's on a 15-year fixed.
Okay.
That's pretty low. It was like 3.5 or something.
Okay. And
it's actually a good loan.
Do you owe any money on any of these rentals?
Yes. I mean, I still have quite a bit of debt in total. I still, when you include my house plus all the rentals, right at like $1.13 million that
okay.
I owe against everything.
So this kind of speaks to the psychology of it. This kind of speaks to the psychology of it, which is why pay off your home and not the rentals?
I don't really have a good answer for that one, other than just trying to get rid of monthly payments.
Okay, but so let's just forget, right, that one is your home and one is against a property, which is just all that is you pledge different pieces of collateral to an institution in order for you to borrow the money in which you pay back. But
right.
You're not going to default on any of them, the assumption is, right?
So I'm in great shape.
So the assumption is that we don't actually care whether it's a home or whether it's a rental or whether it is whatever. What we really care about is the cost of money. Yeah. All right. So if I was looking at paying off a mortgage, then I'm going to answer your question in general, but this is for the rest of the listeners. If you're looking to pay off a mortgage or debt in general, you start with the highest cost of money first. You don't worry about whether it's on your home or not on your home. That's psychological, right? People like paying off their homes because it's psychological to have that weight lifted. But let's say the interest rate on your rental property was 7% and the interest rate on your home was 3.5, and neither of them are going to go back to the bank at any point in the future. You would pay off the highest cost of money first, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay,
correct.
So yes. Think about your debt that way. Think about your debt. What the second question is, why are we paying off the debt at all? Right? Why are we paying off the debt?
Or maybe he wants the ability to be able to.
Right?
Right. Well, I want to pay off the debt because then I don't have any payments. So basically then my rent's coming in increases my cash flow. I'll be right back as if I'm not working.
So the money that's in your deferred comp plan, regardless of your age, once you leave, you can have access to that.
You could leave tomorrow
without penalty. The 401k, that you've got to wait until age 50. If you leave before age 50, it's locked up till 59 and a half. If you leave the year you reach age 50, you have access to it. And that law changed in 2016 under the Trade Priorities and Accountability Act, impacted local police, firemen, and some other safety workers. So
what I'm talking about.
So your deferred compensation is available to you once you separate from service right now.
But stay till age 50, I'm a lot more flexible. But yes. You could stay. If you weren't a safety worker, you can still take your 401k and set up a monthly payment that would equal your mortgage payment.
I don't know if any of this is a good idea, though.
Okay, well, so.
And that was actually my question.
But sometimes options are good. And so. Greg, if you go with your plan at age 50, here's the options you have available to you, right? So you've got roughly $600,000 in retirement accounts that you can draw upon without any early restrictions. You just pay taxes on it when you pull it out.
Which is a great option.
It's a great option because you're leaving a job. You say, I don't know what my future is going to look like. And you can say, you know, I need X dollars per month. Or I want to have the challenge, if you want to take a lump sum and pay your mortgage off, the taxes are going to eat you alive.
It will not be good for you. And the reality is, Scott, the reality is he's 50. You think You're not really retiring. You're just leaving the job you've done for 27 years. You might think you're retiring.
Yeah.
You might think you're retiring.
He's seen enough friends go through that.
Right? You see friends that if they don't go back to work, it's not good for them.
Oh, I understand. I'm just, you get physically and beat up doing
this. Oh, 100% agree with you on that.
Law enforcement isn't overly loved at this point.
Which is awful, by the way. Which, in my own opinion, that's awful. It's awful. But what I think I would probably do is I'd probably look at the debt and then figure out whether it makes sense. What I do know is it probably does not make sense to take money out of the 457 and 401ks to pay down the debt. Just due to the tax implications.
But you could take it out to make your mortgage payment.
That makes a lot of sense.
So you say, let's say your mortgage payment's $2,000 a month, whatever it is. I'm going to have $2,000 a month come to me each month from my retirement account. It's going to pay it. So now I don't have to worry about my mortgage payment.
Right?
Right.
That makes sense.
If I did that and say even one rental that way.
You could do that. And you could stop at any time you wanted.
You might get another job that's paying well and you're like, I don't want it. Why am I taking my money out of my retirement account at age 50?
Yeah.
Well, but see, my thoughts are, I've only got to make it to about 9 more years and then 2 more houses are paid off. And then I've jumped my income up another $3,400 a month.
I'm with you. I'm with you. It's when you'll find that when you leave, it's highly unlikely that you will stay. You'll retire at age 50.
Oh, I know. I thought maybe I'd even go back into law enforcement somewhere else, or another job, and double dip.
Listen, I'm 55. I have lots of friends in law enforcement, and every one of them that has retired prior to the age of 55 has gone back into the workforce in some form or fashion.
I was with one this morning, a retired CHP who has a coaching program for running. I did track workout with this morning,
but.
They
use the word retired, but they're retiring from the job, not from work. So I like the idea. I like your idea. I like the idea of taking money out in order to make monthly payments.
I like the idea of you, let's say it's on your 50th birthday, you're retiring. On that 50th birthday, having it set up so that you've got those mortgage payments met, give you that peace of mind, and keep that until you have another job, and then...
Right.
From a tax standpoint and long-term standpoint, it'd be best to stop it at that point. But it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Right. All I did not even consider just making the payments on the properties like that.
That's why you called.
I just thought about cash and out. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like you said, I just bridge a few more years. Yep. And by the time I'm about 59,
you'll be ready to go.
Rentals will definitely be rolling right along. So,
all right. Okay. Well, we appreciate your service in law enforcement.
Yep. It is very, like you said, it's a pretty thankless job right now.
I can't think of a scarier thing than being a dark night, either in someone's backyard or into a house or pulling someone over in the
morning.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that would be more frightening.
A noble profession, and I've definitely been in my share of critical incidents.
That's awful.
And seen enough death and destruction and that kind of stuff that it's, I like that. It's just time for me to... live like everybody else in a normal life.
Well, we appreciate
you've done a nice job saving, Greg, so that's not easy.
But we appreciate
you. You had sacrifices along the way. And for other listeners that don't have that think, wow, he's getting a good situation, it was a result of a lot of discipline and sacrifices.
And a little bit of nerve to go do the opposite of what everybody else was doing.
There you go.
When I was buying real estate, everybody else thought I was foolish, and it was hard to be that one guy that's going against the grain, but... Yeah. I knew what I was doing.
Well, they can't come live with you in retirement, so that's their problem.
That's right.
We appreciate it.
All right, Greg. Yeah, good luck to you going forward. Glad you called. And again, 1-888-2-HANSEN is our number to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Let's talk to John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the smart move here. A few months ago, my wife passed away, and I've got a life insurance policy, and I'm trying to figure out if it makes sense to pay off the mortgage or invest it.
All right. So let's ask a couple questions. What do you owe on the home?
It's $125,000.
How old are you?
55.
And what were the proceeds of the life insurance policy?
$275,000.
Do you have any children at home?
two.
How old are they?
13 and 14.
Oh, boy. Really sorry about your wife.
Thank you.
And what other assets are there?
Well, there's nothing outstanding other than the home.
Okay. And do you have money in a 401k or?
Yeah, not a lot. It's right at 20,000, and I put in about 400 a month.
Okay.
And was your wife working before she passed away?
Yes.
And what was her approximate income?
I'm going to say between 25 and 30.
And what is your approximate income?
Mine's at about 50.
And you, I assume you have, you're on Social Security now for
the kids?
One of the children. The other one is on Medicaid.
So our typical advice is to do...
So one is on Social Security disability and one is on
disability, survivor benefit.
Understand, but yeah. He said they'll both be on survivor benefit. You said one was on. Why was the other one not on survivor benefit?
I tried, and the Social Security folks told me that she would get a benefit, and then later on, they sent me a notification saying denied.
Why? Is she on Social Security disability?
She's 14.
No, she's on Medicaid. And I was told in this letter, because of the Medicaid, she was denied
Social Security. Why is she on Medicaid?
She has a disability.
Is she receiving money from the government for that disability? No. Okay.
I don't know.
We don't know enough, but
it doesn't seem right.
Here's what I want you to do on that issue.
It does not seem right.
I want you to contact a Social Security attorney on that issue. Okay. So on that issue, it doesn't seem right, but we're not versed well enough to actually know whether it's right or wrong. So it seems to me that they should both be receiving survivor's benefits. So contact a Social Security attorney on that.
Okay.
How much is the benefit the one is receiving a month?
Just over $750 a month.
Okay.
And the mortgage, what's the mortgage payment excluding taxes and insurance?
It's about $930.
And what's the interest rate on that? Do you know?
3.6.
You know, I wouldn't pay it off. Scott?
Well, it's kind of as a rule of thumb. We don't like anyone making any major decisions for at least 12 months after they lose a spouse. Just because, unless you have to.
Yeah, there's
no. Unless you have to make some financial decision. If you don't have to, then let's just wait and see what the other dust starts to settle.
Yeah, and there's no
because it's hard to even think straight.
Yeah. When did your wife pass away?
It was in July.
Okay.
And was it a sudden thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I would not pay it off.
Actually, you know what? I wouldn't pay it off. Here's what I think I would do. I think I'd just go buy some bank CDs for a little while. Keep a little bit in cash, buy some bank CDs. They got a 13 and 14-year-old at home.
Your life is turned upside down.
One of your child
has... If you're having trouble with the mortgage payment or cash flow's tight...
Take it out. Take $1,000 a month out of the savings account. You've got a 13 and 14-year-old...
And give yourself permission to not make any decisions till next July.
Yeah. When you bring the money, when the bank or the insurance company calls you and they want you to meet with an advisor,
Say no.
You have a 13 and 14-year-old at home, one of which has some medical issues. Your life has just been turned upside down. You're going to be fighting with the Social Security Administration, quite possibly, over the benefit for one of your children. So the takeaway from this phone call that we'd like you to walk with is contact a Social Security attorney locally and ask them about the benefit for your one child that has been denied, and they'll ask you to send the letter over. Then the other is... I would put that money in a bank or brokered CDs, and I would probably, you know, if I was having a hard time making any payments, I'd have $1,000 a month come out to make the house payment, and I'd kick the decision down at least a year.
Yep.
Okay.
Don't talk to people that look like weather people. If they're dressed like a weatherman, don't talk to them because they're trying to sell you something. They point to big charts and use words you don't understand. Just stay away from anyone that is interested in trying to help you with your financial decisions.
Talking with the estate attorney, he said that if the mortgage company gets wind of her passing, that they will probably want the note paid in full.
We'll worry about that when we get there.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
And they may not. They may not. We don't know. I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't.
I'm just thinking, in all my years practicing that, I cannot think of one circumstance where that's been a problem.
I haven't.
You neither? I've been doing this since 1990.
Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about that. That's borrowing trouble. That's borrowing trouble.
You were going along in life. You had these plans. And suddenly life has changed dramatically for you and your two children, right? And your life's, it's a bit of a fog right now. It's like you're trying to even make sense of the day, trying to be strong for your children, all those things. You don't have to make any major, any financial decision you make today is not going to have much of an impact on your life anyway.
Yeah. And if
you make the wrong one,
it will.
Yes.
And it's clouded. So like I said, just contact the Social Security attorney.
How much are they paying you in interest? Cause it's in some interest bearing account now, right? They sent you a checkbook.
I just opened a standard checking account.
Okay. So go to
a high yielded savings account. There's high yielding savings accounts.
Go to bankrate.com. You put it in a high yield savings account. Go to bankrate.com. They'll send you a checkbook. You don't care where it's at. As long as it's FDIC insured.
Up to 250.
Up to 250. Okay. Actually, yes. Do you have a trust in place? Living trust?
The children have trust in place, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And then next July, revisit.
Yeah, call us back next July.
Next July.
Us back next July and we'll walk through it again with you, John.
I can't think of a financial decision right now that it's going to have a lot of great impact in your life between now and July. And I know of a lot of things that could happen financially that would not be good for you between now and July. Like you get sold an equity index annuity at the bank. You put some money in the stock market and it goes down and now you're concerned about it and all those other things. And right now there's just like, the heck is life even going to look like now?
So, yeah, give us a call next July and appreciate your call.
Yeah.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah. That's a...
And it's different when it's sudden versus not sudden.
Oh, 100%.
How someone reacts. Much different.
Yeah, I had that dear friend of mine's wife passed away. Well, she was a dear friend as well, suddenly a few years ago, and with children at home and...
Young women,
similar ages. It's not that I've been there. Not that I know personally what it's like, but walk alongside someone and. Regardless, look,
there's no hurry in most situations for decision making after a death in the family.
Most of the time, there's not.
Yeah, there's a couple things that
sometimes you might need to retitle an account. You do not need to do a new investment.
Yes.
You do not need to liquidate one thing and buy something new with a new surrender charge or whatever is trying to be sold to you. All right. As we came back in the break, Pat, we had mentioned this story we were going to talk about, which I really had no idea how prevalent this was. This is essentially timber as an investment. And I knew timber is used for investments, typically in pensions, large endowments,
someone with
family offices.
Really, really, really long timeline.
Long time, which is why most individuals don't own it, because it might take 20 or 30 years before you...
From beginning to end.
Yeah, so oftentimes it'll be like in pensions because they have a long...
Yeah, or, you know, oftentimes you'll see certain investments that are owned by institutions because their timeline is...
Maybe indefinite. Perpetuity. Yeah.
So. And you'll see it like huge real estate developments that cover hundreds and hundreds of acres or...
That might be decades.
Might be decades to build those out. And those are pension funds. So,
or extremely wealthy families.
Yes.
Multi-generational.
Well, if you have enough money, I guess, in your family, it's perpetuity.
Yes.
When we were growing up, that would be like 3 weeks. 3 weeks. How long is the whole period on this investment? Oh, until we need it? 3 weeks.
We were hoping to go out to Bobby McGee's for dinner 3 weeks.
So. Bobby McGee's? We would go to the restaurant in the bowling alley. It was cheap.
You got to go to bowling as a kid?
No, we didn't get to go to the bowling. It was the restaurant okay. in the bowling alley. Okay. Only rich kids bowl.
Okay. Yeah, right. So this was actually a story in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago that Pat and I both read it and like, could you see this? So in about 30 years ago, people began planting a lot of timber in the Southeast.
Pine trees specifically.
In part because there was a government program that was trying to encourage people. And a lot of people thought, boy, this is a better idea than the stock market. The stock market's risky. Let's invest in timber.
I get to see it grow. It's easy to take care of. The investment costs aren't that much. So this is a story out of Starkville, Mississippi. If you haven't been there, you're lucky.
Lucky? You don't know. The name is a little interesting. Starkville. Sorry if you're in Starkville, by the way.
So it's a story about Clayton George, who had been growing soybeans on his land. This land had been in the family for over 100 years. It had been sharecropped, cattle grazed on it. They had planted cotton. And finally, he's like, okay, we're going to plant soybeans. After a little while, they were struggling to make ends meet. He pulls all the soybeans up. He plants pine trees. He goes into town and gets a job. Right? Because pine trees aren't the same as soybeans. It's not an annual crop.
Yeah, it's going to go to the sky. You just have to wait for a long time.
Wait. So he takes his asset, which is his land. He plants these pine trees on it, goes into town, gets a job. He's going to come back in 30 years. It's going to be his retirement. That's the idea. Unfortunately, he wasn't the only one thinking this.
6 million people in the Southeast planted crops of at least 10 acres.
Six million.
Prices have plummeted.
This is no different than any other commodity. The biggest difference about this was the time period or the hold.
And the reason we're talking about this, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you're 20 years, 30 years out from retirement, you think you're going to invest in one particular area and you're somehow going to, it's a sure bet. Don't bet on it. Again, it comes back to what we always talk about, every financial advisor does, the importance of diversification. We're very sorry for those that can't retire because their timber is worthless in the Southeast. We're out of time. Join us next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.